Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Who wants to play a game?
It's time for hide and seek.
Is this hide and seek? Are we really going to play that?
What's going on here?
This is the emergency broadcast system.
It is intended for mature audiences.
For real.
Now, a warning.
You're with the Sexperts. Hide and seek on Joy.
I'm too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave me.
You are with the Sexperts here on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, recording in the lands of the Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. You're with John and Michael this evening. We are sans Tim. Tim's got held up at work. Poor love. So Tim will be back joining us again. We haven't removed Tim from the equation. Not at this stage, at least. We've had a couple of gangbusters weeks, and really the last year, we've really broadened the scope of what we kind of talk about and explore in our program. Normally, our program is centrally focused, oscillating around the experiences of queer men and their socio-sexual experiences. But we have we've had some really, really affirming and really wonderfully rich conversations with trans and gender diverse people. Particularly, one that sticks in my heart every time I think about it is the conversation that we had with Alex, who runs the Haven Night, and all about that event, kind of supporting trans and gender diverse communities.
Absolutely.
And so we're now extending our conversation onto an area that we don't talk about as much, which is consent for trans and gender diverse people. We are joined by Star Lady, the program manager at Zoe Bell Gender Collective. Star Lady has a passion for social justice and commitment to equity, tackling discrimination head on through advocacy, education, and community development. Star Lady, you may know from appearing on ABC's trans-focused episode of You Can't Ask That, and has also been responsible for producing some amazing resources in the past, including the TransFem website, and is incredibly passionate about sex and consent. And in her role as program manager, Zoe Bell Gender Collective has recently launched a new 18-plus resource discussing sex and consent for both trans and gender-diverse people and their partners. On the line with us this evening is Star Lady. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's really exciting.
Hopefully I captured your dance card well enough there. but in case I didn't, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that Zoe Bell Gender Collective does?
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, I want to just acknowledge Zoe's legacy. Zoe was a trans woman in the 90s, who was a really amazing advocate, and she passed away. And, you know, our community wanted to honour her legacy. Zoe was really fierce. I've met lots of people who knew her. I didn't know her personally. And they were our values, you know, really sort of like fierce and outspoken and, you know, fighting for the rights of the trans and gender diverse community. And, you know, people have just gone, hey, Zoe, really proud of where, you know, where this organisation has gone. And we do a lot of, in particular, work around, more and more so, around the prevention of violence against trans and gender diverse people, around healthy relationships. And we've been creating more resources in around, sex and consent.
Yeah, wonderful. You touched on an important part, and that kind of underpins, I guess, this episode as a whole, which is healthy relationships for trans folk and those that love them. Can you touch on maybe some of the, I guess, I don't know, the community feedback or the research that kind of underpins the work that you do? Where does that kind of come from?
I mean, there's just so much, researchers from, Archers and Private Life 3 and other research that just talks about how trans and gender diverse people actually experience higher rate of intimate partner violence, sexual assault and or coercion than our sort of cisgender, you know, peers. And I think there's just so much work we need to do around supporting healthier relationships for trans and gender diverse people. I think in particular because of systemic discrimination you know, in our society, there hasn't been a lot of resources that have been inclusive. Like if we're talking about sex and consent and healthy relationships, in particular for young people, trans and gender diverse people and our partners often excluded in those models because they're really sort of like heteronormative and cisnormative. And that just, I think, creates a greater risk for trans and gender diverse people around having healthy relationships. Also, just because of like discrimination with and stigma in our broader society, sometimes trans and gender diverse people can be seen not as like, you know, a valid partner. It's not some, in particular, I know that for like trans women who are dating cis men in particular, sometimes their families and friends are not really sort of supportive.
Yeah.
And when you're not seen in society to be sort of like someone to have a valid and healthy relationship with, it can really, these sort of that those attitudes really drive, I guess, the objectification and fetishization of trans and gender diverse people. And ZGBTZ has done a lot of community consultation about trans and gender diverse people's experiences in relationships, and lots of people talk about being fetishized and objectified. And this is what happens, what occurs when society doesn't respect us and doesn't respect the people that we are in relationships with.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that you've got a new resource available. So I believe that's the Gender Diversity, Sex and Consent.
Yeah. And so I guess some of it, for the last few years, Zoe Bell Gender Collective has had a project called TransFemme. And TransFemme has really sort of done a deep dive into doing sort of like community consultation and learning about the experiences of trans women and trans feminine people dating sort of cis men. And I've interviewed like hundreds of trans women and trans feminine people and their partners on that. And I think, and broadly, the trans and gender diverse community and our partners were really excited about that resource. But a lot of the communities that we were talking to broader was like, hey, that's really fabulous, but what about for us? And we're really underfunded, but we're also really committed to working with the broader trans and gender diverse community. And so we've really taken our learnings from TransFemme. We've done further consultation with the trans and gender diverse community, in particular young trans and gender diverse people. And then we've created a broader resource, both for trans and gender diverse people. Like we created a resource late last year called Gender Euphoria and Sex that was a sex and consent resource for trans and gender diverse people. And now, just within the last week, we've released Gender Diversity, Sex and Consent, which is a resource for the partners of trans and gender diverse people, which includes other trans and gender diverse people as well, because obviously we can date each other.
indeed. I think that underpins a lot of the work that we do in community in terms of what you just said about being under-resourced but over-committed. That's kind of the catch cry.
I know everyone was like, hey, what about us? And I'm like, I'm so there for that.
Oh,
we just
totally
need time and we need resources. Like ZGBTZ is like 2 part-time staff. I think often people think we're a lot bigger or a lot more resource than we are, but we're not. But we're very passionate about these topics.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about some of the content that's within the Gender Diversity, Sex and Consent resource. Talks about the use of respectful language when we're talking about, you know, our partners and how they present and identify and their genitals and all that sort of stuff. And I know Electra was one of the participants who shared kind of a pull quote that's in the resource that talks about feeling uncomfortable when being called a crossdresser, which isn't the language that they use as a trans feminine person. But that might not be the case for someone else. Can you maybe reflect on kind of how you have those conversations with your partners, potential partners, about how they like to be referred to?
I mean, I think this is why it's really important in particular for, for cis people, but, you know, also for other trans and gender diverse people. We just can't make assumptions about how anybody identifies or about the language they use to describe their identity, their bodies, the pronouns that they like. And so it's just really important that we build confidence and capacity to sort of have sensitive conversations with people, especially when we're hooking up with people and just like, hey, is it all right? Can I just check in with you around the language you might use to describe your identity or your body, you know, so that I can be respectful, especially when we're hooking up.
And that's actually a really good point that you've made there. As someone who is in a long-term relationship with a trans feminine person who also plays a lot with a range of people of a variety of genders, it's something that I've noticed that the language that one person is comfortable with can be very different to the language that other people are comfortable with. And to be respectful, you've got to really come to the table with what the individual that you're with finds to be right for them.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and we're all different. And exactly. We just need to sort of the respect that diversity that exists within our community. And that just means like having a conversation before like getting intimate and just going, hey, I really want to be respectful. Can I just check in with you around this? You know, it's really important that you seek permission, you know, first, that that's done in a sort of really private way, and that it's like you're choosing the right time to have that conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And to reflect on when Alex was on the program talking about Haven, he was talking about how affirming it was when he was, you know, initially hooking up with his now long-term partner. Mm. And it was like they were on the dance floor or they were heading home somewhere. It was just this really like innocuous phrase of like, hey, when we go home together later, how do you want me to refer to like the parts of your body that I'm touching? And Alex was like, oh, that just like, it just made me feel so safe to like continue dancing with you, to keep flirting, to know that when we go home together that I'm going to be in a safe space, because you've already kind of like, it goes beyond just how do you want me to refer to your genitalia. It's like, oh, you've now opened the door up for me to know that you're like a sensitive and respectful person.
Yeah.
And it is just important for people to know that, trans and genderless people do sometimes use different language than cisgender people to describe parts of their body. And it's really important that we're aware of that and we're respectful of that.
Yeah, totally. And some of those terms and language can be like super affirming for one person and super like not affirming for another. Someone might like to be referred to as a crossdresser or a sissy because it's, you know, how they engage in that play. But someone else is like, whoa, never call me that, please.
Exactly. Like some of the things that I know that my partner and I will say with each other is stuff that I know that some of my other friends that I play with would absolutely not come to the table with and would actually feel really put off by. So it's, you got to be understanding of where other people are at and that where their headspace is completely okay. You just have to respect it.
We were talking before, Star Lady, about the resource that preceded the one that you've just released, which was Gender Euphoria and Sex. For people that, you know, maybe aren't familiar with when we're talking about dysphoria and euphoria, what do those things mean and why are they so impactful for the experiences of trans folk?
Yeah, I mean, gender dysphoria, it can reference like a formal diagnosis. Sometimes it's used by psychologists and physicians to describe people who experience significant dysphoria or distress with their sort of gender that they're assigned at birth. But we can also, trans and gender-verse people can also experience body dysphoria, which is similar to gender dysphoria, but just references, particular parts of people's bodies that they might experience distress or discomfort with. While gender euphoria really sort of like references a sort of like sense of happiness that a trans and genderverse person can experience around affirming their own gender or their gender being affirmed by others.
Thinking about euphoria for trans folk, obviously that transcends just, you know, how they think about, you know, their sexual relationships. It goes beyond and reflects, you know, how they move through life in their day-to-day worlds and how they think about themselves and their relationship to their employer or to their parents or to whoever. Mm. So it kind of extends beyond, you need to be euphoric just so that you can have a happy and productive sex life. It kind of goes beyond that, correct?
Yeah. Gender euphoria is like that general sense of happiness that people can experience around their gender. But, you know, sex is an important part of our lives. And if our partners are respectful of trans and gender diverse people and checking in and make sure that we're having an enjoyable, you know, safe and respectful experience, we're more likely to be experiencing euphoria through sex. And, you know, sex is such a great way to also explore your gender identity, you know, how you have sex and who you have sex with can change as you begin to affirm your gender identity. And so I think we've just got to be thinking about how can we make sure that our partners are experiencing, you know, joy and pleasure?
Yeah. Something that you mentioned before, Star Lady, was around in putting together this resource, the one that preceded it, and obviously Transfem, which is one of your other existing resources. You did a lot, I think you said hundreds of, you know, interviews with people to get their experiences. Can I just ask, from a kind of a programmatic perspective for yourself and people working on this, what was that experience like in kind of collating all of those and, you know, having these really kind of raw and open conversations with people?
Oh, like a lot of what we were talking about, unfortunately, was trans and gender diverse. You know, I mean, a lot was like around trans women's relationships with cis men. And there's just so much sort of experiences of violence, discrimination, abuse, of being kept hidden, that actually it was quite challenging to have those, like, interviews. And unfortunately, in terms of some of our work, we were really trying to reach out to communities of men who mightn't, who fetishize and objectify trans women. And so having some of those conversations with those men about, you know, where is that objectification and fetishization coming from was also sort of really challenging, to have those conversations and to hear their sort of like views and attitudes, which were quite often misogynistic. I guess what also gave me hope was, in a sense, in doing those interviews, we also had a lot of men who are allies of trans women really sort of like step up and come out and go, hey, I either want to be doing better. Some of them acknowledge that they hadn't been respectful of trans women, you know, historically, and wanted to do better. But some were also like, I guess, like super allies and going, I want, you know, trans women to be respected and I want to stand beside them. And so that was, interviewing those men gave me hope, but they were few and far between, unfortunately.
That sounds like it must have been both really, really challenging, and also, at least with the latter cohort, sounds like it would have been at least a real point of hope. And I think sometimes even getting the conversation started with a partner, particularly a long-term partner, can be really daunting. Like, personally, my partner came out, would have been 4 or 5 years after we first got together, and came out as trans. And over the last few years, we've actually had to have a lot of those conversations and work out how we can develop our relationship in that regard. So I understand that Gender Euphoria and Sex has actually got some great template questions that people can use to lead those conversations. What are some of the points of guidance that it gives?
I think some of it's like trans people, you know, first in particular, need to be thinking around, like, do a bit of like, self-evaluation about like how you're feeling about, you know, sex, something that you want to have with this person. Do you want to have it at this time? How would you like to have sex? What would you like to try? What gives you pleasure? What are your boundaries around your body and how people like interact with them? How do you describe your body? How are you going to talk about, you know, sex and consent with your partner? So it really gives trans people, some frameworks to like think about how they would like to have sex, because that's the first point before you can communicate to that to your partner and to set your boundaries and to really have an understanding of what your boundaries might be, so that then you can sort of like communicate them to your partners.
And I wanted to reflect on going back to kind of that statement around gender euphoria. And I just wanted to pick up on something you mentioned earlier around, I think it was that people that were interviewed felt hidden. And I know that there's kind of like a common thread, and we'll talk about this maybe later in the Transfem discussion, but for those trans women that, you know, might be having an active and productive sex life in a one-on-one capacity, but, you know, not getting all of the romance and taken out for nice dinners and introduced to friends and family and stuff, how does that kind of impact the social well-being of trans folk, or trans women specifically, I guess?
Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, being hidden and being kept a secret because your partner is ashamed of their relationship with you or hooking up with you or doesn't want other people to know can be sort of like really hurtful and can really sort of impact the health and well-being of trans women, it also creates like really sort of like significant, imbalances of power, in those relationships, and can really impact trans women sort of like safety and well-being. We have like created like a new set of resources, for cis men of like, how do I overcome being worried about dating trans women in public, so that men can do that sort of like self work, so that they can become more sort of like confident, I guess, as trans women, we've gone on a journey to be ourselves, to affirm our gender identity. We've already gone through that, that process of like, well, this is who I am. It doesn't matter how society is going to discriminate me. This is what I need to do for my own health and well-being and to be true to myself. Many cis men haven't necessarily had those experiences of discrimination. And so it's new for them. And so they have to do that work to sort of like overcome that shame and stigma, because otherwise they're projecting that onto their partner. And sometimes that's leading to violence, and sometimes that's leading to being hidden and for those relationships to be secretive, which I think is really harmful towards trans women, is something that we need to change.
Yeah. And I think for, a lot of our listeners will be, cisgender, gay, bi or queer men that might not have kind of an intersection into this experience. But there are quite a lot of men from my own community, cis gay men, that might be having relationships with other men who might be, heterosexually identified or closeted or just not out yet, and be having kind of some of those same experiences where they might be in a position of, needing to please their partner or not say the wrong thing or not say hello to them down the pub or whatever, because they don't want to be clued in that they've connected with this gay person. So I think there's like there's a common ingredient that kind of goes into all of these dishes that we're all eating, I guess, in different ways. Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
And I do think there's a complexity there, because sometimes, for some people, in and around their family and friends, it might not be safe for them to come out.
Yeah. Exactly.
And, and so there are sort of like challenges. But even with those challenges, you can still find places, events, or ways to be respectful of your partner. But sometimes we also do need to have that level of awareness of like, okay, it's not safe, where it may not be safe for someone to disclose that information. And we all have, there's a bit of a self-evaluation, and we have to recognize that for some people. But if it's just because people are uncomfortable, then I think that can be different.
And I think that's actually touching into another thing, is that when people have been in those situations of having felt unsafe to come out, that can take a while for that feeling to go away. So you might be in a relationship with someone who has yet to come out as trans, who it takes a while to even come out to you. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they feel unsafe with you, but they've got that lingering feeling of fear from unsafe situations that may have made it difficult for them to feel safe.
Mm. And perceived harms can be as damaging in some regards as real experienced harms as well. The perception that what if my partner leaves me, or what if I lose my job, and all those things can be real, but they can be perceived as well, I guess.
And we're going to talk now a little about disclosure. So in some casual hookup settings, it might not be necessary, appropriate, or even safe for a trans person to disclose their transness. What point do people need to start thinking about disclosure, Starlady?
Well, I think, disclosure, like disclosing that you have a trans history or trans experience, can be sort of really, it can be incredibly complex. And there can be so many different reasons why a person may not want to disclose that information. Some of it because, especially for people who might have like a binary experience, like trans people who identify as a woman or as a man, they may not really identify with their sort of like being transgender. They may more identify as being a woman or a man. People can be really worried, in particular around sort of like safety. Like people can sometimes react really violently to that information. Also, if people breach your confidentiality, trans people can experience really high rates of sort of like discrimination, and people might have had lots of previous negative experiences. And so people can be sort of like managing their sort of like safety, their well-being, and their sort of like, you know, identity. But just so disclosing to people can be really tricky. Sometimes trans people, you know, when they choose to share that information with people can be really different. Some trans people like to share that information like upfront, straight away. Some trans people might want to share that information after they've gotten to know someone better. Sometimes trans people decide never to share that information, you know, and they keep that sort of like private and confidential, and just understanding that trans people like have the right to privacy. But sometimes when people do choose to disclose their, you know, identity, it's just really important that they take their own sort of like safety and well-being into account, because we know that people can sometimes, in particular cis men, can react violently to that information, or react in a way that's sort of disrespectful and unsafe. And so in like, I mean, some of our resources, we just talk about like how and where you choose to disclose. And sometimes that might be like choosing to like pick a restaurant or a public place so that you can be safe. Other trans people wanted to do that like in a letter, disclose that information in a letter to their partners or over the phone, and ask their partners to like point their partners out to some resources and to take some time to think about it and then come back to them, you know, after they've processed it, so to ensure that they're sort of like fully informed, respectful, and they're not saying anything that's sort of like hurtful towards trans and gender diverse people. But I think we do need to think about how and have a plan around how people might respond. What are we going to do if they respond poorly? Because we just need to keep ourselves like safe, you know, when disclosing that information.
Yeah, and the thing that I'm reflecting on in having this conversation is, you know, for my my peers that are, you know, trans men that, as you were reflecting on, have kind of a binary experience and you present masculine, for instance, sometimes what they say to me is, you know, it's just exhausting to have to like talk someone and baby someone through the process of, well, this is what my genitals are like and this is what we'll do together and stuff. And they're like, at the end of the day, I just want to go out and I just want to get off. So, you know, things like where you have the ability to, you know, cruising and beats and stuff for people in that community sometimes can be really affirming, because it's like, I could just go out, I can have sex, I don't have to, you know, disclose to anyone, come home and just be done with it. So I think there's certain where it
can
is
just come and go,
where it's easier to not disclose. Yeah. I think there's certain validity in that, and to reflect on your point about the privacy of trans people, I think is really important.
And
as
just
well,
like risk of also to be thinking about the risk of you know, assault in those places and safety.
Oh, absolutely,
is really, you know, it can be also a really big part, you know, part of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. When, you know, the assault rate in some of those, or the unsafety in those situations is true for everyone, that's obviously heightened for the experiences of trans people as well.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. We were reflecting earlier, Star Lady, about the resource that Zoe Bell Gender Collective came out with some time ago, which was TransFemme, which was a website sharing stories and tips of healthy relationships specifically between trans women and men or their male partners. Can you share a little bit about, and we talked about this a little bit, you know, the collection of some of those stories and what people displayed as their kind of like, I don't know, their hopes and dreams for improving those relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I think trans women, you know, want to be, they want to have like healthy relationships. They want to be respected. They often talked about wanting to be seen as a whole person rather than being just sort of reduced to their sort of trans identity, or reduced to their body, or being reduced to an object, you know, of sex. And they wanted to have relationships that were public relationships, where it was like out on the street, going on a date, going on a walk in the park, meeting people's like friends and families. I think our relationships are more than just sex, but they're also more than about two people. They're also about our friends, you know, our friends, family, community, culture. And these things were really important to trans women, and they wanted to be able to have like access to those things that I think a lot of people in our society really sort of like take for granted.
Yeah.
I know what's in really sort of like exciting news is CGBC's, one of the things we found is when men's family and friends were supportive, the relationships between trans women and men were much more likely to be healthy, and they were much more likely to be long-lasting. But when his friends and family shamed him for his attraction to trans women. He was more likely to objectify or fetishize trans women, but also the relationships were much more likely to break down, or in sometimes in response, he was much more likely to immediately engage in intimate partner violence and be violent to his partner. And so there's this really big role, I guess, in our broader society that friends and families can play. And we're at ZGBC in the next few weeks is about to launch another section of TransFam that is deliberately is being targeted to people's friends and families. So it's going beyond just the relationships between trans women and cis men to being how can our communities support our relationships to be healthier? Because until general society changes its attitudes, I think the violence towards trans women won't stop. And we can also, like, yes, some of the responsibility lies with this from men and men, cis men particularly, to take up that sort of responsibility to be respectful, but also to be aware that our broader community is driving that violence and what can they do to support healthier relationships.
I think that's actually a really good point, is that resources like that for family members and for extended family is actually really, really useful, because while people may have had colleagues or so on that have been trans, having someone who's actually now in the family, that's an added layer of intimacy, that's an added layer of closeness, where you may need a deeper understanding of what it means to have someone in your orbit who's trans that is deeper than it would have been if it was, oh, there's someone in the office who's trans, someone who I'm seeing at work or the school or uni or so on happens to be trans. When they're in your family, it's a deeper level of understanding that you actually need. I remember when my partner came out as trans, my mother instantly hit me up and went, okay, so I would like to now understand more, because while there were people at work who were trans, I never really had to know that much. And so, yeah, I think resources like that are actually very, very helpful in making those relationships healthier.
Yeah, and also, like, I guess, like, knowing the rate of discrimination that trans and genderverse people can experience, that some our resources also help people in how to be an ally, how to be a bystander. So if another member of the family or community or friend is behaving inappropriately, our new resources will be giving them, I guess, tips and guides to, like, how to be a really good ally, how to be that bystander, how to intervene and how to do it safely, but also how to do it in a way the way you feel confident.
Yeah, totally. Very much looking forward to seeing these new resources. Starlady, in having this conversation, we've been talking about the experiences of trans folk and their relationships with, you know, primarily cis partners. In terms of putting these resources together, were there any introspections from people that shared their stories with you that talked about their experience as a non-binary person and any particular areas that, you know, we can all be better to support our sexual partners?
Yeah, I think some non-binary people in particular talked about how while sometimes people might have been respectful of their gender identity outside of the bedroom, when it came to, like, sex and intimacy, it was almost like their gender identity was erased. In particular, people who might have, like, you know, been assigned female at birth but identify, you know, are non-binary, talked about how were like, I am not a woman. Do not have sex with me as, you know, as a woman. I'm a non-binary person. Don't erase my non-binariness during sex. And check in with me how I like to sort of, like, have sex, what sex, you know, what acts that I want to do, what's affirming for me, and what maybe creates a sense of dysphoria, but how they could tell that people weren't respecting them or weren't seeing them fully, really, truly, their whole selves, and how that came out in sex. And I think that can impact all trans and genderverse people, but it was definitely a theme that emerged with all non-binary people, and it was something that repeatedly came up in the quotes that people that we put throughout our resources. And so it's just really important that we respect and that we respect our partner's gender identity at all times, in particularly during sex, and we check in with them about what might affirm them, what brings them joy, but also what sexual acts or what things might create a dysphoria, or where they may not feel validated or respected in their sort of like identity.
Just reflecting on John's experience, who had his current partner came in as trans kind of during their relationships, are there any good resources that help support particularly queer men, but, you know, for anyone that has a partner who's transitioning?
I mean, I think, like, resources like on Trans Hub has really extensive resources around trans and genderverse people and their relationships, their partners, and for their family and friends. And so I'd really sort of explore that resource.
Yeah, wonderful. We'll talk about a few resources this week in the show, and we'll have all of those in our podcast page. If you just head to joy.org.au/hide-and-seek, we'll have a whole list of and litany of resources, including Zobel Gender Collectives in there as well. Starlady, I wanted to ask about a lot of the resources, including TransFem, have really kind of interpersonal connections. They're really intimate. In terms of the ways that we connect that maybe aren't quite so intimate or maybe lead to intimacy down the way, I wanted to reflect on, you know, the way that we hook up on apps or the way that we investigate a new sexual partner on the apps. Are there any tips or resources available that kind of talk about how we connect online as well as when we're hooking up in person?
I mean, we've also created and we're about to release in the next few weeks a whole new series of resources for cis men. I think some of the tips that we have in our gender diversity, sex and consent resources will help people, like how to talk to trans and gender diverse people on apps. But I have created a new one for cis men that's about how do I talk to trans women on dating apps. And, you know, I think there's a lot of, like, again, it's a lot around sort of like language and respectful language and about how you communicate to people. But it's also sometimes about asking questions around bodies. People are sometimes very quick to ask trans and gender diverse people really highly invasive questions and questions that can be really sensitive about our bodies, about what body parts they like. Like, men will often, like, really just straight up ask, like, do you have this bit of junk or this, you know, asking about your private body part. And it can feel like you're being reduced to your, in particular, your sexual organs.
Mm.
And that can be sort of, like, really harmful. And so one of the really good tips is if you are after trans and gender, well, anyone with a particular body part, you know, it's better for you to name that yourself rather than to demand that a trans and gender diverse person discloses private information about their body. Mm. It can just sort of be really humiliating and degrading, especially if that's not something they're interested in. One of my tips I do when I'm like on a dating app, I always ask people, now, are you looking for a particular type of trans woman? And they get all freaked out. And they're, why are you asking? And I'm like, because some men are only looking for trans women with particular types of body.
Yeah.
Is that what you're after? And it's like for them to disclose rather than shaming and humiliating me and then going, oh, no, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
And so it's just about being more respectful. The bodies are really, so it can be really sensitive issue for trans and gender diverse people. And it's just really private. And it's just like, how can you, you know, communicate that in a sort of like safe and respectful way without sort of like, you know, demanding too much from people.
Mm. That's a really good tip, kind of asking them to disclose. What are you after? And then I'll tell you if I fit the bill.
Yeah.
And also around just like, oh my God, like sexual like health, I think, you know, I think in particular for cis men, you know, I think within the queer community, there can be higher literacy around sexual health and sexual health because of so much of the work about LGBTI organizations has become in a way sort of like really normalized.
Mm.
But that, you know, I found like with a lot of people, trans women we interviewed, many of the men were asking them inappropriate and I guess like derogatory questions, asking if people were clean.
Yeah.
You know, and not taking and just like, you know, and so it's like, some of the tips are like, how do you have conversations around like sexual health? and how do you check in? And so, like, a really great way of doing that is to just go, hey, I just want to, is it okay if we have a conversation around sexual health? I had my last sexual health checkup, you know, taking that self-responsibility then. Can I check in with you? Do you get regular sexual health checkups? You know, how can we do it in a way that's sort of really respectful rather than a way that's sort of like stigmatizing and shameful?
Yeah. And I think one of the things to remember with sexual health conversations is that it's important to be willing to discuss what's going on, because if you're on an app and someone goes, would you mind disclosing your status or things like that, that's a valid question to ask, but you've got to do it in a way that's not leading or damaging or disrespectful. You've got to be polite and affirming.
And it goes... It goes on to the apps, I think, as well, to make sure that people are as well protected as they possibly can be. You know, putting things into place to, you know, report inappropriate behavior and going the extra mile to, you know, put some of that being able to be, like, listed in your profile. So, like, when your last test was and what your pronouns are and how you like to be referred, having the infrastructure to support that, I think, is really helpful. However, I did have an instance the other day where, and I don't use the apps very often because I primarily just hook up with my partner, but I had my...
Shocking.
Shocking. I had my last sexual health test listed on an app and I hadn't updated it because I literally hadn't been on it in months. And the first... I opened it and this is always the way. You're like, oh, I might go on Grindr, and then you're like, oh, this is why I don't go on Grindr.
Yeah.
The first thing someone said to me was like, oh, you haven't been tested in forever, like, get to a clinic kind of thing, like, you irresponsible person. And I was like, how about hello?
Yeah, actually, I got name checked by one of my friends on one of the apps where I've hopped on first time for a while, and I've instantly, well, within the first 10 minutes, gotten a message from someone I know going, hey, hon, it's time to update your profile. And it's literally, I've gone on, it's like, oh, I have left my test date as the middle of last year, and I've had like 4 or 5 tests since then.
Yeah, got to play catch up and update the apps. It would be nice if it just auto-updated, like, your age. It's like, did you get tested? Yes, thank you.
Can we tie it into my Google Calendar or something like that?
That would be very nice.
I know, come on.
Starlady, we were talking...
I just think also, just while we're talking about, like, dating apps, I think we need, you know, there needs to be a greater conversation around sharing explicit pictures.
Yes.
And just, like, we cannot, like, force or coerce people to share explicit pictures.
No.
And not everyone, like, can. And also, I think, you know, for trans people, there can be sort of, like, a greater risk that your any images you sent out there can be used to sort of, like, you know, exploit you or might put you at sort of at risk, you know, and that people might use that against you. And I think we just need to have a greater sort of, like, respecting people's sort of, like, right to privacy, right to
Definitely.
Say no.
Yeah,
and I know. Like, I mean, I'm a very visible member of our and well-known part of our community, and many men are often asking me for sexually explicit pictures, and I'm like, no way am I putting that out there, because there is a very big risk to me, you know, personally, if they're sort of shared without consent or used to sort of, like, coerce or manipulate me.
So,
you know, but I often just receive this incredible amount of pressure to share images that I have no interest in, and that they're not respectful when I say no.
Absolutely. And the flip side to that is I'm someone who very rarely says no when someone offers to send me pictures. But if I get sent pictures without being asked first, that is such a turnoff for me.
And what's also a turnoff is when without prompt, send you pictures and then say, oh, we'll unlock your album, send pictures to me. And you're like, I didn't ask for yours first.
We need to, like, actively seek consent before we send any images.
Yep.
You know, it's really, and there are just too many people, I think, on apps sharing explicit pictures without asking for consent first, and we really sort of need to change the culture around this on apps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I got sent some pictures the other day by someone who literally, there was no, hi, how are you, I really like your profile, anything like that. It was literally just, and
unlocked.
That's your penis.
Yeah.
Thank you, no.
Yeah, thank you, no. And just, like, sharing pictures can be really sexy. It can be really hot. But check in first. You know, is that something you want? And, you know, if they want, are they open to it? And maybe describe also what you're thinking of sending so that people can go, okay, I'm up for that. You know, because when you think, the picture could be of anything. But, you know, it's important to go, can I show you these pictures? Yeah, these pictures will contain these things. Is that okay?
Yeah. Mm. And I think, again, to go back to, you know, the apps and the technology and the tools that we have, I think there's some growth that needs to happen there in terms of, like, you know, maybe when you're sending a message to the first person for the first time, if it's with a picture, maybe the app pops up and goes, hello, it looks like you've maybe forgotten to introduce yourself first before you send this picture, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
Would you like to introduce yourself first? And, like, here are some tips that might be kind of useful. Thinking outside the, you know, the apps and resources, I just wanted to reflect on, that's obviously some of the work that Zoe Bell Gender Collective does, but I wanted to just create a little bit of space to talk about, obviously, you work heavily in the role of advocacy and in training. I was wondering if you could maybe share about some of the information that you translate from the resources into kind of like a training and upskilling capacity for, you know, clinics and services that want to do better to trans people.
Yeah, so we've been doing a lot of work in particular for like the LGBTI services. We've been doing sessions on trans femme, on sex and consent. We've also been working with the prevention of violence sectors. I've been doing a lot with family violence, like shelters, in particular shelters that have historically been women's shelters that are sort of like opening up who they provide services to, so that trans and gender diverse people who are experiencing intimate partner violence can get access to the support that they sort of need. And also we're trying to do more work in talking to the sexual assault sector and sort of like translating our sort of knowledge of what sort of drives the violence and how we can provide people with a support. Like currently at the moment, we're creating one of the sort of like first international manuals that's around trans and gender, around trans women's experiences of fetishization and objectification that is going to be directed towards practitioners. Because obviously we've created all these resources for communities, but we also, when people need support because of their experiences of sexual assault or intimate partner violence, they need to be supported. And so we've got to build the capacity of services to provide sort of respectful and inclusive care, and so that they understand the issues that are impacting us and what are the types of ways that are to appropriately respond to those experiences.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Star Lady, for joining us from the Zoe Bell Gender Collective to talk about these fantastic new resources and supporting healthier relationships between trans folk and the people in relationships with them. Before we let you go, can I just ask, where can people find out more about the resources themselves and about the work that Zoe Bell Gender Collective does?
Yeah, totally. So you can find our new resources, gender diversity, sex and consent, gender euphoria and sex, on the ZGBC website. That's zgbc.org.au, and you just look up like app resources and you look up relationships, and that's where those resources will be placed. They're also like currently sitting on our sort of like new news. And obviously there's also trans femme, and you can look up www.transfemme.com.au.
Fantastic. And we'll, again, have all of those resources in our podcast notes. Just head to joy.org.au/hideandseek, and we'll have a number of different resources there, including Trans Hub and ways to report inappropriate behaviour online to maximise your social and emotional well-being, as well as your physical health and well-being. Star Lady, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I've just lost my train of thought. That's all right. Star Lady, thank you so much for joining us again from the Zoe Bell Gender Collective. We will talk to you soon. Thank you so much for joining us here with the Sexperts on Hide and Seek.
Thank you for having me.
Do you want more?
Yes! Yes! Oh! Yes! Yes! Oh!
Catch all the Hide and Seek episodes on podcast at joy.org.au/hideandseek.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.